make sure that all those people being interviewed provide you with a multimedia laser show to keep your interest maintained.
Classic approach to the problem, if I do say so myself.
Don't unlock doors you're not prepared to go through.
The security of this nation depends on complete and total compliance. Tonight, any protester, any instigator, or agitator will be made example of.
Coverage.
Well, you mean them little root weevils that crawl around popping off cameras in your face?
Those root weevils write history.
Good day to the world, and good day to Revolution Radios. Welcome to FreedomSlips.com and Revolution Radio.
People should not be afraid of their governments. Governments should be afraid of their people.
As the 21st century began, human evolution was at a turning point. Natural selection, the process by which the strongest, the smartest, the fastest reproduced in greater numbers than the rest, a process which had once favored the noblest traits of man, now began to favor different traits. Most science fiction of the day predicted a future that was more civilized and more intelligent. But as time went on, things seemed to be heading in the opposite direction, a dumbing down. How did this happen? Evolution does not necessarily reward intelligence. With no natural predators to thin the herd, it began to simply reward those who reproduced the most and left the intelligent to become an endangered species.
I would like, if I may, to take you on a strange journey.
Welcome to Revolution Radio with today's edition of Event Horizons, anchored by Dr. Robin Falkoff, an intelligent foray into the news and events of our current time. Robin and her team are going to take you around the world with fresh perspectives on what is going on in your world today. So stay put while Robin and crew bring you to the truth of the matter here at Revolution Radio, where the truth never sleeps.
He wants a challenge. Let's give him one.
Okay, my friends, sorry for the delay. I've been locked out of my accounts, locked out of Skype, and locked out of the email where I could get it. It wouldn't accept my passwords that were for those accounts. So I had to reset everything, and then it wasn't accepting the codes that they gave me. And here we are, starting late. My apologies. There's nothing I hate more than wasting time. We've got Olay ready, I believe. Let me check. And let me see if he's all set. And we're going to have Olay for the first hour. And boy, we're going to have an action-packed first hour. And then we've got a lot of news in the second hour. So I want to thank you all for being here. Okay. Oh, gosh. And we will do It Takes a Smile at the top of the next hour, because we've already lost time. So my apologies. I thank you all for your support. I'm your anchor and producer, Dr. Robin Falkoff. It is my pleasure to be here with you Monday through Friday from 10 to noon Eastern Time here at Revolution Radio's home, freedomslips.com in Studio A, which is a win-win situation for us all. Oh boy, love being here, love spending time with all of you, but let's get moving because I don't really know where we're going to begin. So this is going to be a surprise for me as well as for you. I want to remind everybody, all the show announcements went out, and I certainly hope that you guys check those, because it's, if I don't get to it, it still is what is happening, and you need to be aware of these different stories. But there are a lot of links about Olay, and many of you have come to be familiar with demigarding, the new verb, or it's not so new anymore, that was created because of his successful predictions about where more false flags were going to occur. So his website is lightonconspiracies.com. Contact him there, info@lightonconspiracies.com. There's a newsletter. There's a Patreon link where you can support him. Membership for getting the special email alerts. His Facebook page is ole.damigard. Twitter is lightonconspira. YouTube is Ole Damigard without anything in between. So there's an awful lot. Let me get him now and let's get moving. And my apologies. That's not what I expected to have. I got everything all set and thought, wow, this is great. You know, we'll just get started in the morning. But no, I have no idea if anybody else is having problems where your passwords are not being recognized. You know, and you have to go through all these hoops and then to get to the account where you can get your password. That's not being recognized. If you are, please let me know. Misery loves company, but here is Ole, gods of Skype. We want a great connection to make up for all these delays. Good morning, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing super good, thank you. How are you?
Oh, better, better. I was locked out of Skype and the email recovery account, so I had to reset everything. Scrambling, I just got online.
We're living in bizarre times. Everybody's being hit in different ways. So,
Yeah. I was just asking the audience if anyone else is going through that. Please let me know. I'd like to hear about it.
No, but the Skype, YouTube, Google, it's when you're in these areas of true speaking, they try to knock you down. And these are three of the avenues where they hit you.
Oh, gosh, yes. Facebook, I mean, they've got even a sense of humor. You know, now you see it, now you don't. Or else, you know, you're just locked out. But, Mike, what have you been up to? I mean, we've seen crazy everywhere and, you know, expected false flags, expected insanity. And, you know, we know more stuff is brewing. What have you made of all this craziness?
Robin, I can't remember what were we talking about last time I was on your show. How far did we update, sort of?
We were talking about the second big school shooting after Parkland, and we didn't, I believe it was the Texas shooting, and we didn't get into the connections, you know, how everything was fitting together and indications for what might follow next. And, you know, I mean, it's after the Santa Fe, Texas. Now there's something else. Was another one in Texas?
They're ramping up the speed if you haven't noticed. But it's very interesting because it used to be, once a year, and then it was once a month. And then was scare of the week, but now it's almost scare of the day, you know, like doom, 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 doom. And so the number of operations are really speeding up here in an incredible speed, but also the quality of them is just going down the drain because it's absolutely crap operation, identical situation being repeated, repeated, repeated. We have not spoken about the attacks in Germany and Toronto and so on, have we?
No, we have not. Nope, we weren't going outside the United States. We had plenty here.
Oh, yeah, but the thing...
Waffle House the last time. We did all that Waffle House craziness, which no one will ever look at Waffle Houses the same.
True. No, because the thing is, if you look at this only from an American point of view, you're making a mistake. If you look at this only from a European point of view, you're making a mistake, and so on. Because they're coordinated. This is a coordinated attack on the world, more or less. But what we are focusing on is the Western world. And so, as you know, I've been able to predict at least 12 of these false flag attacks sometimes up to 2 months before they actually happen, due to these hidden clues that are left behind in the forensic evidence. And for those of you listeners who are not aware of it, it's in the end, I think it was the end of 2014, somebody contacted me, an insider, saying that I was missing out on the clues. And I didn't understand what he was referring to, but he said they always leave hidden clues about the upcoming operation in the evidence. And the reason for this was, he explained, because the way they interpret the law of karma is that if they show us what they're up to, what they're going to do, and we do not react, then it's up to us. It's the bad karma's on our shoulders. So they need to tell us what they're going to do. Which is fantastic, I think, because suddenly this gives us the possibility of getting one step ahead instead of always being one step behind. And so over the years, I've come to develop quite a sense for these hidden clues. And this is it's through my knowledge that they actually leave these clues that I've been able to learn how they do it and interpret the sort of, it's almost like to learn a new language with the grammar and the pronunciation, everything, to see how are they communicating with us. And so the month of April was absolutely crazy when it came to these operations. There were four or five major ones. But like I said, you have to look upon this from a higher point of view. This is not something happening in France or Germany or Belgium or the US or Australia as separate entities. This is a coordinated attack. So this is also how I, through, for instance, the Fort Lauderdale Airport attack, January 2017, was able to predict the Melbourne car attack. The Melbourne car attack led me to predict the Westminster Bridge attack in London. And the Westminster Bridge attack showed clues for the attack in Copenhagen that then was redirected at Stockholm, the truck attack there, and so on and so on. So it goes from different continents, different countries, but all of them are connected through NATO and different security agreements, the way I understand it. So we're looking at NATO countries, the US, Canada, Australia, some North African country, but that is more or less it. And then it works around in a circular motion so that here in Europe, for instance, it just goes round and round, the same countries, the same police district, being repeated with Allah Akbar and suicide bombers and so on. But it's just the same script being used, recycled, the same crisis actors being recycled, the same team of actors. It's just recycling terror. And so when we look at the month of April, if it's okay with you, I would just like to connect some dots here and show you what I believe could be the next one, because the next one, if I'm correct, that is a major one. So I really hope that I'm not right on that one.
And you can. Go ahead, please. We need to hear this.
Okay. So I don't know where to start, really. But in the beginning of April, there was an alleged multi-stabbing in Holland, in Den Haag. There was the usual Allah Akbar. Somebody said that he was a Muslim stabbing people and then shot by the police. When you look into these ones, it's the same theme, like I said, again, boring someone like myself to tears. But I have to look into it. Anyway, so there was this police car that kept popping up in different locations around that and other events in the beginning of the month of April. And on the license plate, it had the number 666, which is a very strong symbolic number in satanic rituals and also for Freemasons and also these type of operations. Then on the 7th of April, there was an attack in Germany, in the city of Münster or the town of Münster. Now, Germany, I think most people are not aware of it, but it's still under occupation. It has not been a free territory since the Second World War. And it is like a U.S. army base, more or less, all of these bases all over, and it's not a free country, and a part of NATO. So there was this alleged terror attack in Münster. And often also when they handpick these locations, I believe that it's part of a psyop so that they can play with the words with your subconscious. So I've seen several headlines where it says monster truck attack, where it was actually Münster van attack, but that type of thing. Okay, so the vehicle itself, it said that this guy had a bad day, a German guy, and he just decided, well, I'm going to kill some people today. So he drove into town and entered into a small little square in the town, in the old town, that is normally blocked off, so you cannot enter with vehicles, but this day, very conveniently, these metal poles were taken away so that the car could enter in and allegedly kill some people in there. Well, very strange, the whole event, because people on site, just within half an hour, were resetting the furniture and fixing everything up after the photo shoot had been done for the journalist. So in the middle of this crime scene, in front of live cameras, they were sort of putting up the chairs and tables again, laughing, smiling, and so on. So we're back to the staged event. So anyway, when you look at the alleged van that is said to have killed these people, it is a van, it's a VW Volkswagen, and the model is a California van, meaning possibly pointing towards the US. Now, the number plate is MS for Münster, and then YK666. Here we have 666 again. And YK could be "you're kidding." It is also subconsciously saying York. We're going to come back to York, New York, and so on. And right after this happened, the fire brigade arrived, and there were three firefighters that was filmed from behind with the number 666. They all had the number 6 on their backs, meaning 666 again.
Yeah.
So then there was another vehicle close by. That was let me just check the number plate on that one. Another of these bizarre vehicles. It's just a car standing there close to it. It's a VW as well. The number plate is MS Münster and then NY9011. And I don't know about you, but in my world, that says New York 911. So possibly another one pointing towards the US, the center of the U.S., like I'm going to come back, New York or Washington, D.C. is what we're seeing here. But it's at the same, right after that, there was the anniversary of the Oklahoma City bombing, which took place, I believe, on the 23rd of April, 1995, with a Ryder truck. It is said that Timothy McVeigh drove this homemade bomb and parked it outside the Alfred P. Murray building, blowing this whole thing up. Absolutely not true at all. It was rigged from the inside with special explosives. It was a massive big operation, partly to cover up the Clintons' very illegal business deals and frauds and so on. I think you had, Cody was with me once, Cody Snodgrass, the CIA whistleblower, where he was talking about this because he was actually approached and given the job to blow up this building about a year before it actually happened, where he turned it down and then became a liability instead of an asset. But anyway, in Oklahoma City, there is this monument. It's a very Freemasonic monument. The whole design of it is very Freemasonic. It's also right in front of the Freemasons headquarters in Oklahoma City. And the Alfred P. Murray building was also a Freemason building with the official sign outside the building before it was blown up was the pyramid with the all-seeing eye and then the name under. And also Alfred P. Murray, who was a lawyer and a judge, was a known Freemason as well. But when you look at this monument, it's the official time for the bomb is said to have been 9:03 in the morning. But there are two sort of open gates, and then with a reflecting pond, which is also one of these Freemasonic favorite things. And 9:03, on one of the walls, it says 9:03, which is the time of the bombing. But on another one, it says 9:01. And 9:01, there's absolutely no reason for that if you compare to the official story. So the question is, why have they used 9:01 on that wall? Are we back to some very powerful and symbolic numerology here? And if so, is the number plate NY9011 possibly also indirectly connected to Oklahoma City? It might sound a little confusing, but please bear with me. I'm going to take you around in a circle and hopefully make this understandable in the end.
Go ahead. You're the expert.
Yeah, but a confused one, I tell you, because it's just there's just so many of these things. Anyway, so we had at the more or less the same date as the Oklahoma City anniversary, where there was the first conference ever. Cody Snodgrass was supposed to be there. He didn't come. I was supposed to be on Skype, didn't work, technical issues and so on. But the conference itself did take place, which was absolutely great. So that was a big step forward. But more or less at the same time, there was a van attack in Toronto, Canada. And it is said that once again, somebody woke up, had a bad day, thought, get myself some people killed here. So he took a van, a Ryder van, the exact same as the Ryder truck. Here we have this recycling and how they use our subconscious again. So it was a Ryder van this time. And he drove down a street in central Toronto, killing a lot of people, allegedly. But this exact thing happened as when there was also a G7 summit meeting taking place in Toronto. And I would suggest very possibly this incident happened as a diversion away from this G7 summit, because that is what they normally do. They have something that will take away our attention from the important stuff, like the Bilderberg meeting, these different summits and so on. So they, just like about a 1 week before the so-called Bilderberg meeting, there's always, every single year, something, boom, that goes off, and then the media's focus is over there on some alleged Muslim terrorist doing something stupid instead of really focusing on this world shadow government and see what they're up to. And the Bilderberg meeting is normally the first week of June. So I would strongly suggest that there would be one very, very shortly. There would be something that says boom and take away the attention from this meeting that is taking place in Italy this year, in Venice or Turin, I'm not sure, but one of these cities. So here we have this van that drove down the road and the street and killed all of these people. But when you look at it, we're back to the same bizarre things. There's absolutely no blood on the van, just like with all of these other vehicles. No blood, no blood on the tires, on the front, the bumper. We have what do you call these fire hydrants? Is that what it's called? These small little metal?
Fire hydrants, yeah.
One of them is knocked over on the pavement, but there should be a fountain coming up. But here it's just lying there looking like, just looking dramatic. And when you check the bumper on the car, it should have made a massive dent, but there's nothing there. Also, the headlights have been sort of unscrewed and taken away. The whole front of the car has been taken away, just like the truck in Nice and the truck in Stockholm. This is the way they make the vehicle look injured, but it's actually not really. And then the hood itself looked like somebody has taken a sledgehammer and just knocked it out of shape, because the way it's dented is a way of something very hard, like a wall or a sledgehammer or something like that. Another vehicle has pushed it together. Because the thing is, with a normal human body, the body is soft, the vehicle is hard. So the impact will be on the softer thing mostly. And in this case, it would be the legs and under the lower part of the body on the victims. And normally the impact on a car when it hits pedestrians is on the windscreen, you know, the windshield, because that is where the body is thrown up. And then that is when where you can see the impact. But here, not as the window is absolutely perfect. No airbag has expanded or exploded. And so doesn't match up at all. Then you have the normal shoes are just all over the place. And the GoFundMe campaigns that it started almost before it happened, you know, and then also some of the victims were hit right outside a very Freemasonic park. The whole setup of the park is, I think the park name is Mel Lastman. And that is right opposite the Simon Wiesenthal Holocaust Center, which is also interesting because this many times these locations and buildings are very connected. So you look at these victims. That I mean, one victim is lying in the street where they put two brand new sneakers next to the body. Do you remember the Nike shoes that we always see here?
Yeah.
And then I feel it's almost like they're talking to me, because I'm always saying we need to look for the clues. We need to, and here, breaking news, ABC, deadly van attack. Then the body there with the shoes right there, brand new shoes next to the body. And then it says searching for clues.
Yeah.
And on the body, they dropped his cell phone. So the cell phone is on top of him. Another body that is being carried away on a stretcher, they put a big medical bag on the head of the victim.
What?
Meaning it's not a real victim. This is the thing. This is what I'm saying here. These are not real victims.
God. It's and, so in our faces. It's just incredible.
It is. But anyway, so let me confuse you a little bit more, and let's go back to Germany where the van attack. And please also remember the reason for all of these van attacks is because problem, reaction, solution. So many vehicles are driven into crowds, are killing people on pavements and sidewalks and you name it. So I guess the vehicle must be a problem. Cars, vans, bus, trucks. I mean, we've seen so many of them these last few years, haven't we? So vehicles must be a problem. Reaction, oh my God, something needs to be done. What needs to be done? In on stage, driverless vehicles, autonomous vehicles. That is what they want. And so you will see that there's this trend. One of these attacks happened, and in the same country, there's like a wave of propaganda for driverless vehicles following. So they go hand in hand. And once there's a very Israeli push behind these different technologies and so on as well. So I would say problem, reaction, solution. That is why all of these van attacks happens. So we go back to Germany, to Münster, which is a small town with an old town. Not a big city, no real reason for why something like this would happen there. But in when you look at this whole setup and how it's carried out, the whole thing is bizarre. Like I said, people were fixing the furniture and so on within half an hour after it happened or is said to have happened. And also in the middle of the night, the forensic team are still there. There's all of these dramatic photos taken. And they've got a stretcher with a body on, but they've leaned it up against a car so that it's almost vertical, but the body is still on it. I mean, is that something you would do with a dead body?
No.
What
was the body wearing?
Sorry?
What was the body wearing?
No, the body is on the plastic cover. Oh,
body bag. Okay, gotcha.
But I tell you, I don't think you can do that even with a body, you know, to just put it. And I saw one time at the alleged Queen's Day attack in Holland. Afterwards, the police was walking around. There were sort of the covered bodies that were covered with what looked like blankets and so on. And it was just the cameras was just rolling, you know, and in the background, because there were hundreds of people there on the crime scene. It was a big open intersection where this is said to have happened. And in the background, this police officer or somebody in a police uniform who was not aware that he was filmed was walking around cleaning up. And he took this, what looked like a body that was covered with a blanket, and just pushed it together. Like film props, it was like 6 feet, and then he just pushed it together so he could take it under his arm, and he walked off with it. I was like, what the hell was that?
Wow.
But I believe that these are the things, you know, when they do war movies and you got multiple bodies spread around or tents, you know, when you got like 100 tents in a military scene, to make it look even bigger, they have small tents and mini tents and so on to get the perspective, or they used to in the old days. I was part of a war movie once where they did exactly that. So there's all of these props for these type of things. And I believe this is what we're seeing here, that this body leaned up against the wall, not a real body. But anyway, there was this thing happened right outside a restaurant called the Großer Kippenkerl Gasthaus. And I thought that was such a strange word, Kippenkerl, and I didn't understand what it meant, but it was so central in so many photos, and it was almost like the photographer had sort of made an effort to keep that name in the center of the photo. Once again, these type of things make me go, whoa, I need to check it out. So the Kippenkerl turns out to be a statue in this little town square. And it is on sort of like a concrete foot. And then the statue of this guy, this Kippenkerl, is there. And it's an old statue from the 1890s. It's of one of these, it's a guy who is walking from town to town selling stuff, but also bringing the news. And he is the Kippenkerl, this guy. But when politicians and people came to this place, you know, the same old story with flowers and candles and put signs there, why did this happen and so on. And so where did they put it? Did they put it where the people were killed? No, they put it in front of this statue. So I was like, okay, here's another bit of a strange thing about this statue. And also like the mayor of the city and politicians, German top politicians came there to pay their homage to the victims and so on. But they were standing in front of the statue, not in front of where this thing happened, even though it was close by. So I thought that is quite an interesting statue. And since these clues can be presented in so many different ways, I really started looking into this statue. And it turned out that the statue was actually used by the Nazis during the Second World War in their propaganda, because when the Allies came through Germany, they destroyed the whole town of Münster. And the only thing standing, more or less, was this statue. So the Nazis used that and said, we're still standing strong, you know, even though everything is going down, we're still standing. And they made a poster, trotzdem und dennoch we start fast or something like that. So I kept looking into the statue, and it turned out suddenly that there was actually a copy of the statue made. And so that is not so normal. So I started looking into who made the copy and where is it. And it turned out that it's in the U.S. and that there is a an American artist called Jeff Koons that I remember very well from around Pizzagate. There was a lot of people involved in Pizzagate that had his art in their homes, and all, and it's very bizarre art, if you ask me, some of it. Very sexual, but also, like, there's this of a young girl sitting in a bathtub naked and holding her breast open mouth, and then the top of the head is chopped off. There's the top of the head is just not there.
Yeah,
I think these type of things are very bizarre. And also when you get into this whole thing with kids and trafficking, and, you know, not very nice links. So it turned out that Jeff Koons had made the copy of this statue. And this statue is so different from everything else that he's made. So it, once again, I sort of, why and where is this leading me? Now, the statue he made is an identical copy of the statue, but it's it looks like liquid mercury. It's totally shiny, and just like in Terminator, the cop in Terminator, if you remember him.
Yeah.
And so I located where this statue is now, and it's actually at the Hirschhorn Museum, right in Washington, D.C. And so I went in on Google Map trying to find the exact position, because sometimes these bizarre clues are just heading and leading you to, it's like a Dan Brown novel, leading you to the the next one, and then the ultimate target. So it turns out that this Hirschhorn Museum, where this statue is, it's located in the sculpture garden right outside, and it turns out it is right in the middle between the Washington Monument, you know, the big obelisk, massive Freemasonic symbol, and the capital of Washington, D.C. It's right in the center between these two. So I don't know what to say, but I mean, if I'm interpreting, if these are dots left there on purpose and I'm connecting them in the right order, then that is not a pretty picture. Because the Capitol is the seat of the Senate, and that would be a dream target for these dark forces if they could hit that, knock out the Capitol, and because then it would just be open doors for martial law and FEMA camps and you name it. So
I hear you. You definitely want to be wrong. I hear you.
Do you know there's one TV series that has been talking about this exact type of disaster? It's with Kiefer Sutherland, and it's called Designated Survivor, where the Capitol was hit and he had to take over and lead the country. I mean, he was just an extra down the line and just had to do this whole thing. And the reason why I mention Kiefer Sutherland and this series is because many times they leave clues in movies and magazines and in very strange places. And do you remember we've been speaking about Kiefer Sutherland once before, some years ago, because he was the actor in a series called 24. Do you remember that one?
Yeah, paralleled things politically, yes.
And his name was Jack Bauer. He was an FBI agent working for the president. And the president, for the first time ever, I believe was the first time ever, was a black man.
Yep.
This man in the first series was wonderful. He was just beautiful boys, beautiful men, beautiful ethics, high morals, high standards, everything. He said something, that was it. Boom. He would not bend over anything. Then the second series, well, we had some other threats and, well, because of national security, okay, torture him, waterboard him. Sorry, that has to be done. But so third series, my God, totally off the roof. I mean, we were into what later really happened in the US more or less. But I've always suspected that this 24, that series, was part of a PSYOP opening up the doors for Mr. Barack Obama.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
That came from more or less nowhere, I would suggest, as a constructed identity. I mean, when you look at his birth certificates, his background, so many things doesn't match up at all. At all. And then him being led in on stage like a rock star, being named the best president ever before he was even elected, given the Nobel Peace Prize for things to come. It's just bizarre. It's just bizarre, the whole thing. But there's another one also aiming at New York. And once again, please, I'm not here to spread fear or scare anyone. At the same time, things are speeding up and we need to become aware of these things so that we can help diffuse them.
Yep.
And so the attack in Toronto, Canada, to go back there again, it happened in a part of the city called North York, which is, I think, quite near to New York, as these different weird connections. And there was just a few days after this attack in Toronto, it turned out that 700 pounds of dynamite had been stolen 75 miles from New Jersey's border, which is not so far from New York. And then there was this very sinister ISIS poster being spread on the internet, where there's this guy down in the subway. He has this sinister smirk. He's standing with a bag. And in the background, you can see a train coming in the tunnel. Then it says, "You will not expect where we will attack." And in the background, they're painted on the wall, ISIS. Underneath it, a bunch of dynamite sticks. And then there's the sign, High Street, Brooklyn Bridge.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, exactly. And if you remember, there was another truck attack in Manhattan not so long ago, where a guy is said to have driven into over some pedestrians on a bicycle lane and then hit a bus and then the police took him and so on. That whole thing also, absolute crap operation. But they spread the rumor afterwards in media that he had planned to hit Brooklyn Bridge as well. So there is something around Brooklyn Bridge, New York, Washington, D.C., in the boiling, or in the preparations, I think.
Wow. Yeah, that's just a massive part of downtown Manhattan where Brooklyn Bridge is, by Little Italy and Chinatown. That would be devastating.
And it's also, just to calm you down a little bit, they can now do multiple hits at the same time.
What can't they do? You know, they're desperate. It's crazy. I mean, I don't know. It's like people were watching for the Craigslist and the other places where they would advertise, you know, these crisis actors that were needed. I think they've just ramped up to a whole other level.
I agree. And once again, I'm not here to spread fear. I'm just trying to show you what I found. And please be aware that the drill is almost always there as a standard part of one of these operations. So there's been several drills in New York as well with very low flying helicopters. And so what they're up to, only God knows, or they know. But I would like to say to people involved in these operations, militaries, personnel and so on, please become aware of what you're doing. Please be aware, become aware of what you're doing to your own country, to your own countrymen. Just because you're being given an order and you think it's cool to run around in this kind of gear, and so it is in your own nation. And the thing, the plan is to destroy your nation. So if you're part of these operations or FEMA operations, homeland security drills, whatever, understand what's going on. You are part of destroying your own nation and indirectly the world the way we know it. So I would very strongly suggest wake up and get out, become brave and take a step forward, expose what's going on while time is still here, while we still have a possibility to do something about it. It's because this is not fun anymore. This is not, yeah, but I can't do it because what about my pension? You will not have somewhere to spend your pension life or your life as a pensionist. It will not be there if this continues.
We get motivated. They're saving the world.
The thing is, it's speeding up, it's heating up, and it's a boiler cooker. We need to act. You know, it's like the slowing thing with the boiling frogs. They say that if you just slowly raise the temperature, the frogs won't jump out. It's getting pretty warm here. I would say it's getting pretty warm. And it's time for us to say, whoa, enough is enough. This is going berserk. This is absolute madness that is taking place here. And it's only there because we accept it, that we don't do anything. We're just like walking around like zombies and saying, well, as long as I've got my new iPhone, I'm happy. But what about your kids? What about future generations? Don't you think it would be sort of like a nice idea if you gave them some kind of consideration?
Yeah, think about the future. But I don't know what to say. You know, you think of how people can be manipulated, each different level of authority, and it's understandable. But by now, aren't they seeing the patterns? I mean... That's the part that isn't understandable. How many people are brain dead in this country? They've been marginalized. The young people, the knee-jerk reactions, the extreme positions of hatred about everything. Got a lot of work to do.
I just hope I'm totally wrong, that I can say. But But we've been waiting for this because it's come to a point where it's just ramping up. I think because they're getting desperate. I hope so, this is one of the reasons, because otherwise they could do this in a much more subtle and efficient form that would work better for them. But here it's just like bum, 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 bum. And please also look at this. How come... Have you seen, like, there's been two school shootings in 1 week? No, it's very evenly spread out. One over here, then one over there. One over here, then one over there. And then spread out over the country so that we get sort of like an even level of fear being spread out. Because if it just happens in Texas, wouldn't really affect Colorado now, would it? So there's this spreading out and using statistics to just boost the whole thing out of proportions. I tell you, just because statistics say something or you are being served a number in the newspapers that now there's been like 14,000 school shooting, it's absolutely not true. These figures doesn't match up at all. At all. Once you start looking, it's like, what the hell is that? Do you know that they placed 14,000 shoes outside the Capitol some months ago after the alleged shooting in Parkland, Florida? Because they said that is one pair of shoes per killed child in school shooting. That is absolutely not true. Yes, it's not even close.
Maybe it's projecting into the future for what their expectations are.
But have we spoken about these shoes, Robin? Have we spoken about what they really are?
You've got maybe a minute to get it in.
Okay. No, because I think it's a trigger of mass hypnosis, fear. They've shown this shoe so many times in situations that is horrific, and it's there as a trigger, just like when you torture somebody, break them down for MKUltra purposes. What they often do is they torture people, and at the same time that they go through this horrendous pain, they're being shown images. Then in the end, when this person is totally broken down, the only thing they need to do is show the symbol, and boom, it activates. It just, the person just goes into this trauma state right away. And here, this shoe has been used ever since the Holocaust, the alleged Holocaust, with mountains of shoes. And over the generations, the shoe. So now, many times, like after the Las Vegas shooting, New York Times, what did they have on the front page from this shooting? They had an image of a puddle of blood and a shoe next to it. So that shoe, I would say, is a mass trigger of mass hypnosis or mass trauma.
You're listening to Revolution Control. Radio, Freedom
of
Slips.
So the trigger, that is what
we'll
is there.
We'll be right back after this message.
I hear you. It's crazy. So we've got a lot to be paying attention to. I know you have to get to another appointment, yes?
I do indeed. So once again, Rob, please let me just end with a prayer.
Through the rainbow,
you know,
crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space and time, across the dimensions, through the elements, and in harmony with the colors of the universe. Through her mastery of abstract stream of consciousness, malleable presence, she weaves a web of comic, satiric, cosmic conversation. Subjects can range from Norman, the goose next door, to astrology and earth changes, and into the deep recesses of the soul matrix. She holds a wealth of knowledge on herbs, plants, and astrology.
Okay, yeah, I think
join Mona and her guests
break,
on adventures
so
with feral hippies.
Time,
and she touches the earthly radio waves 5 days a week at 2 p.m. Monday to Friday on Studio B at Revolution Radio.
Take care.
Thanks so much. Oh, my gosh, guys. Hang in there. We'll be right back.
Transcending time and space, let us take you to the place inside your mind where thoughts divide and mysteries unwind. Join us every Monday evening right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. And you will catch the Fenton Perspective with our great host, Lorian Fenton. Come listen in as she shares her amazing stories from the past to present, along with all of her guest secrets to the future. That's the Fenton Perspective every Monday evening right here from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, only on Revolution Radio. Oh, and you don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Who are we? Where do we come from? Are you curious about the origins of the human race? Join me, Gavin McCall, and a variety of guests on Ancient Humans, where we decipher world events, explore scientific theories, personal stories, myths, mysteries, and lore about the history of the human race.
Hi everybody, it's me, the Fetch, host of Inside the Eye Live. Before the Sunday mainstream media, political pundit talk shows, there is Inside the Eye Live, where we break down some of the weekly mainstream media talking points before the talking points even get aired. Add in some entertaining stories, weather, cats, intriguing and informative guests, and you get one of the most listened to Saturday morning streaming media political talk shows going today. And it's all right here on our flagship station, Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. So join me, The Fetch, for Inside the Eye Live every Saturday morning at 10 o'clock a.m. Eastern. It is truly intelligent media for the politically aware.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Good morning and welcome to Event Horizons. I'm your anchor and producer, Dr. Robin Falkov. It's my pleasure to be here with you. I hope I'm not talking over the bumper, but I can't tell because I can't hear anything. This has been rather challenging. Okay. Oh, God. There's going to be an expanded Russia review. I can't believe this. This is like endless, just pissing away our money. I mean, endless. Well, hopefully it'll be closed for good. You know, I what can we say? What can we say? You know, I guess I shouldn't have anything on in the background to be so aggravating with this insanity. What can I tell you guys? But here we are. You know, we had a challenging start this morning, but we got everything resolved. And I'm happy to be here with you. And I'm with you Monday through Friday from 10 to noon Eastern time here at Revolution Radio's home, freedomslips.com, which is outstanding. And it just is a great home to have because we're not censored. And that is a big deal, not being censored, let me tell you, because suddenly you recognize, ooh, we can say what we want. There's no blackouts or loss of signal or other kinds of weird complications. So it works out pretty well. So that's a good thing. That's a good thing, my friends. You know, the things that work out pretty well. And we just have a lot on our plate these days with all this crazy. We've had Ole Damgaard on in the first hour. His website is Light on Conspiracies. You can subscribe to his newsletter. You can make donations. You know, for all of us that are doing this work, your support is important. And I've got to get something up on my page because I've been doing this for 9 years with no support. And it gets really old when, you know, you've got a lot of other things on your plate that are necessities. So yeah, I've got, I guess, a lot of work to do on stuff. But my friends, it just is, well, we know everything is kind of crazy these days. And we're just happy to be here with you. We so appreciate all that you do for the network for 8 years and counting, all the donations, all the incredible support that you give to us. It means the world. You guys are the absolute best. And it just, you know, you've gotten us through every challenge that we've had to face. So that is something. Every challenge. And don't think that it goes unnoticed because you are our great big extended family. And we treasure you guys. You are the absolute best. And it is just a wonderful, wonderful opportunity with your support that keeps us on the air and all of us donating our time. Well, that's another thing altogether. and, you know, donating our time, being aware of all the things going on. We need so many eyes and ears out and reporting to us that it just, you know, it's a overwhelming amount of information to process for all of us. So we need a team. And we've got over 80 different hosts. I think that's a big deal, 80 different hosts. And you can subscribe to our archives for $5.99 a month, which is quite a win-win situation, $5.99 a month to get all of those programs and all of the, oh my gosh, information that goes with it. Just very, very affordable. It makes a great gift for Father's Day, a house present if you're going to stay with somebody for the weekend or going for dinner or whatever. Oh, surprise. Look at this. Check your email. I set up an account for you. That, my friends, is nice because they can choose what they want to hear. I'm sure they'll ask you for a little bit of guidance, and it works out really well. So, yeah, lots to be aware of. And then, of course, my friends, for things working out really well, well, you know how it goes. It only takes a smile. And with that smile, my friends, boy, the miracles that unfold can blow us away. They're so game-changing. They really are. And you find that here you have got a whole amazing group of people that you are living in the midst of, and everybody is finally getting to know each other. And that is a big deal because it's you know, it's your neighborhood. We are the first line of defense for each other. So with that smile, with that reaching out that you do, our bodies in their infinite wisdom, that second brain in our guts, that, what can I tell you, immune system that works 24/7, just keeps on going and going. And we find that it releases when it recognizes that there has been a resonant interface of conscious beings, a cascade of feel-good neuroendocrine transmitters that just amaze us and fill us with such excitement. We are energized. We are ready. We're anticipating just the most wonderful conversation. And that is what we have. But we've just slipped right into it. We didn't even realize. And suddenly, we're like old friends. This is so nostalgic. There are memories that resonate with this experience of connecting with the people around us. And this was how it used to be, how communities used to be with taking care of each other. And that, my friends, is a big deal. And that is what we can achieve once we get things in motion, because as you will see, people want to come over when you're talking because, you know, everybody pays attention to what goes on around them. And you're finding that, wait a second, I don't think those people knew each other, but look, they're in the midst of a conversation. I better find out what's going on. Do we have an issue here in our neighborhood? Is there a problem? What needs to be done? And, okay, so we look into it. We look into it and we find that we've got the same concerns. So that's not much of a problem. I'd say that's really a good thing that we share the same motivations to make it better. And that, my friends, is a game changer because suddenly we're working together, you know, working together. And that is astonishing. There is so much that we achieve, so much that changes everything. It's just mind-blowing. And my gosh, it's just a wonderful, wonderful feeling to suddenly be connected and recognizing that this is starting a whole new time for everybody living in this area with these connections, with the meetings, with all the good stuff that we can do together to have potluck brunches, dinners, lunches, breakfast, you name it. The sky's the limit. And hopefully you have gotten your seed packages from Revolution Radio. And if you've not, it's time to do it. And do it you must, because it's already the 22nd of May. You've got to get things growing. I'm looking at how fast the wavelengths of light are just treating my new pepper plants. So it's cool, it's exciting, and it's just the absolute best to know that you and your neighbors have committed to a project and you're growing food and sharing it with everyone, and everyone is going to have optimal nutrition. That, my friends, is quite a win-win. That, my friends, is just amazing. So let's get moving, and let's just remember how many people are just coming together one by one, person by person. It's spread so fast, my guys. It's just, you think about going viral. This is as big as it gets, because who knows how many other people speak to other people. And this is how we make it better. This is how suddenly we put together a group and we go and visit those bozos that we put in office and let them know, you know, you've been pretty complacent and you haven't lived up to your promises. You are replaceable. And we will make it our focus to have new laws passed so that you are replaceable, removable before your term is finished. Because if you're doing such a horrible job, why in the world would we keep you on? And when we've got a group, we get your attention. So, well, it's a good thing you're paying attention now, because this is important. And it just is a whole lot of crazy, guys, a whole lot of crazy. So, okay. Yeah, let's get moving. We've got a lot to cover. I'm just wondering, let me get to my show announcements. Here we are. Okay. Gosh, we covered so much with Ole, looking at something near the Brooklyn Bridge in Manhattan, which I hope and pray doesn't happen. But heads up, guys, pay attention to weirdness, and something near Washington, D.C., where that other statue may be, near the Washington Monument. So Ole and I are hoping that maybe they're misdirecting us. I don't know, but it is very concerning and very challenging about all of this. So, okay, let me get to some stories. I wanted to do some QAnon stuff, but I'm hearing that some of you are not that happy listening to the recording. So I do have a surprise in store on Friday. We have Deborah Carruthers, the Bankster Slayer. She is back. Ooh, and I can't wait to hear what she has in store for us. Because if you guys aren't following her on Twitter, you are missing a whole bunch of dots getting connected, and her commentary is rocking it. Let me tell you, it really is. So let me start with this one that I found very concerning, especially since I know now my family has Alexa in the house. So I really have to find a way to make sure Alexa doesn't work. Gosh, I think I can be creative. So this was a story at technocracynews.com about a warning. Keep Amazon's Alexa away from your kids. So we'll go through this pretty quickly. There's a note from the editor. Amazon says it takes privacy seriously. Yeah, invading privacy. But the bigger issue here is the mental health of the child exposed to artificial intelligence. Health risks are the last thing from a technocrat's mind when inventing technology to advance mankind. So the article, what's the best way to keep adults from questioning the use of a deeply problematic product? Get them started when they're too young to question anything. Amazon has a new addition to its line of voice-commanded artificial intelligence, Alexa Assistant, marketed for use by children as young as 5 years old who can barely grasp a box of juice let alone digital privacy. Now a coalition of children's privacy and psychology advocates are warning parents away from Amazon's latest, cutest device, saying it could normalize surveillance and harm children's mental development. The Echo Dot for kids is functionally identical to the Echo Dot for adults, except that it's brightly colored and inexplicably costs $30 more than the grown-up version. Cosmetics aside, Echo Dot is still an AI-powered microphone that listens constantly for an activation keyword, relays a user's voice to remote servers where it is analyzed and processed opaquely, and then returns to an increasing long list of commands. On its packaging, Amazon highlights commands like tell me a story and start SpongeBob. Dot for Kids will not only perpetually listen to and entertain your children, but attempt to teach them manners in your stead. Alexa even provides positive feedback when kids ask questions and remember to say please, says Amazon. But a group of experts say Amazon's little Play-Doh-colored pucks have no place near children. A statement released today by the Campaign for Commercial-Free Childhood, or CCFC, which previously led a prominent campaign against a version of Facebook Messenger aimed at kids, claims that Dot for Kids and its ability to streamline a kid's interaction with brands pose significant threats to children's well-being and privacy. The CDFC statement is joined by critical letters from Senator Edward Markey and Representative Joe Barton. According to the CCFC's exec director, Josh Golan, Amazon wants kids to be dependent on its data gathering device from the moment they wake up until they go to bed at night. AI devices raise a host of privacy concerns and interfere with the face-to-face interactions and self-driven play that children need to thrive. Jeff Chester, executive director of the Center for Digital Democracy, which co-signed the statement, added his concerns. Commercially produced voice technologies such as Amazon Echo are primarily designed to promote products and brands. Amazon is acting irresponsibly by urging parents to unleash an AI-driven Alexa product into their children's lives without first ensuring it will not harm their cognitive and emotional development. Echo Dot Kids is designed to encourage children to give up their personal information so it can drive even more revenues for the e-commerce colossus. In particular, Amazon's relatively cheap devices, including Kindle and Echo, are more or less openly a play at getting consumers locked into the Amazon Prime ecosystem of services, serving as a fire hose of Amazon licensed content and, of course, an easy way to buy goods from the megastore. Amazon provided counter statements to both the CCFC statement and the congressional letter, stating that the company will be working directly, quote, with the senator's office to address each question and that Amazon takes privacy and security seriously. As I said, it takes my words, invading our privacy and security seriously. Amazon also touted the communal nature of Dot for Kids, saying technology in general isn't a replacement for parenting, a social connection. One of the great things about Alexa and Echo is the communal nature of the device. Parents and kids can join in the learning and fun together. We believe one of the core benefits of free time and free time unlimited is that the services provide parents the tools they need to help manage the interactions between their child and Alexa as they see fit. Yeah, pull the plug. For example, parents can review and listen to all their children's voice recordings in the Alexa app. They can also review free time unlimited activity via the parent dashboard and set bedtime limits or pause the device whenever they'd like. The CCFC statement includes critical statements from a variety of experts in a variety of fields, including Mass Institute of Technology, oh boy, Professor Sherry Turkle, development pediatrician Jenny Rudesky, and Cade Crockford of the American Civil Liberties Union of Massachusetts. Massachusetts, Massachusetts, my friend. You know, just think of what goes on there. Who stress that children cannot consent to the type of surveillance a device like this will perform on them. They're too young to understand what it means to provide Amazon and potentially numerous other entities with their sensitive information, or to understand what it means to interact with artificial intelligence. And isn't that the truth? Oh, boy. So I hope you guys are going to be really on top of that. We're finding that a Boston restaurant has replaced the chefs with robots. Can you believe it? This was written by Peter Holly. Robotics threatens to disrupt the entire food service industry by replacing both waiters and cooks. There is no wisdom associated with this endeavor, since ethical discussion is not part of the technocrat mind. Other industries face a similar disruption because someone simply can. Yeah, we know how that is. The debate, look at CRISPR-9. Well, we can, so we did it. Well, we let you know about it, you know. But what about those strange results that you got with 1,500 additions to the genetic makeup of this person? Oh, we're looking into that. We'll get back to you. Has anybody heard anything? I haven't. And if I'm mistaken, please send me the link, because I would love to see that. But this, whatever you want to call it, debate about whether cooking is art or science, a never-ending one, and Sprice is the latest culinary experiment in automation, that debate feels pretty well settled. Started by a group of 20-something robotics engineers from MIT, of course, who partnered with Michelin-starred chef Danielle Boulud. The new restaurant in downtown Boston is founded on the idea that a fulfilling meal can be more science than spontaneity. The restaurant's founders have replaced human chefs with 7 automated cooking pots. Isn't that wonderful? I'm watching so much of Iron Chef and Chop because my diet is so limited. So vicariously, I'm enjoying all this other food that I haven't had in years and years. But the cooking pots are automated to whip up meals in 3 minutes or less. A brief description of meal preparation, courtesy of the 26-year-old co-founder Michael Farid, can sound more like lab instructions than conventional cooking. Once you place your order, we have an ingredient delivery system that collects them from the fridge. The ingredients, this is Farid speaking, are portioned into the correct sizes and then delivered to a robotic wok, where they are tumbled at 450 degrees Fahrenheit. Ingredients are cooked and seared, and once the process is complete, the wok tilts downward and puts food into a bowl, and then they're ready to be garnished and served. Spice bills itself as the world's first restaurant featuring a robotic kitchen that cooks complex meals, a distinction that appears to reference burger flipping robots like Flippy, who plied his trade in a California fast food kitchen before being temporarily suspended because he wasn't working fast enough. A prototype of Spice's robotic chef was first assembled in the basement of the co-founder's fraternity house at MIT. The restaurant's dining experience actually begins a few steps before the robots get involved, when customers create customized compostable bowls that cost $7.50 using color touch screens. Heavy on vegetables and healthy grains, the bowls include a calorie count and have themes such as Latin, Thai, Mediterranean, and hearth. Just think about it, guys. Everybody in their little cookie cutter places ordering from a menu to get cookie cutter food. Okay. While meals are cooked, the customer's name appears on an electronic display above their wok, showing their order. Once finished, hot water jets rinse the inside of the woks before another collection of ingredients is dumped inside. Farid said they decided to place the robotic chefs out in the open to remove any lingering mystery. I wonder how long it's going to take for people that are there in the restaurants to try to hack the robotic chefs and screw them up. That's just me. What can I say? You know, you observe human nature, and let's see. Okay, what is today? The 22nd of May. How long is it going to take? So they stated, Farid says again, we didn't want to create a black box that produces a meal. We want this experience to be exciting. Yeah, for you guys, thinking of all the money you're going to make. The restaurant's motto, culinary excellence elevated by technology. That motto is one the restaurant industry is beginning to adopt as a whole, experts say. Restaurants across the country already incorporate automated technology, such as self-service ordering and robotic servers, according to a report last year by the McKinsey Global Institute. The report concluded that jobs that involve predictable, quote, physical activities, end quote, such as cooking or serving food, cleaning kitchens, collecting dirty dishes, and preparing beverages, are the most susceptible to automation. Doesn't that just make you feel all warm and fuzzy, knowing what they're going to have set up for you? I mean, really, it is infuriating. So let me see this one. I can't believe all the people that, I'm glad somebody appreciates my comments. Thank you. People still drink soda. I haven't had soda in years, but of course we know I'm extreme. That's why I have to live vicariously watching food shows. But I do pretty good, you know, with the creations that I have with raw food. So that's, you know, that's good. But listen to this. This is a little shorty. I've got a few short things in here for all you sugar junkies about, well, let me see how long this one, because this is more important. Ah, we're not going to get it in.
Patience was really...
Okay. What is more important? You guys want to hear me talking? Do you want to hear me talking? Or do you want to hear something about the processed food disease of diabetes? Okay, I'm not getting an answer. Okay, let's see. Well, you know, and it's so frustrating for myself as a physician and so many others. When we see what people eat and they say, no, I just want a pill. And I say, oh, I've got somebody just perfect for you. Let me refer you. I can't work with people like that. You know, you've got to change your lifestyle. And then you can get back in balance. And then a lot of these problems are no longer problems. So, let me see. I know there is another one here as well. I don't think. Well, I can. Let me read them and we'll see. Okay. I'll just play the short part and maybe tomorrow we will go into the part about diabetes. Diabetes. My brain is frying. Okay. Well, here's the short part about the drug Fosamax, which I'm sure many of you have seen advertised to death on television. And the header, the opener for this is that Merck's Fosamax fraud demonstrates how Big Pharma and CDC spin statistics to sell ineffective vaccines and drugs. It's been over a decade since the writer came to the realization that the entire profession of medicine had been bamboozled by the propaganda coming from Big Pharma drug and vaccine maker Merck and Company, along with the rest of them, that its so-called fracture preventative drug, Fosamax, had defrauded us doctors and our patients by falsely claiming a 50% efficacy rate in the prevention of bone fractures in osteopenic, osteoporotic women. By doing a little math, the writer understood that the honest truth in the matter was that patients who took the drug for 4 years had a minuscule. Are you listening, everybody out there? If some of the people in your family are taking Fosamax, what's the point? A 1% to 2% absolute risk reduction in the incidence of fractures, which is a much more realistic figure that Merck, being a sociopathic entity to that, is inclined to tell half-truths or outright lies, chose not to use in its advertisements. It is a fact that being truthful in the drug and vaccine industry is an impediment to selling product because they would be admitting they were selling a lousy, fraudulent, relatively ineffective, or dangerous drug or vaccine. In other words, Big Pharma, Big Vaccine is still successfully bamboozling, in his words, us doctors, not all of us doctors, I got to tell you, and patients, as well as the big media, CDC, FDA, MA, AAP, APA, AAFP, NIH, NIMH, Wall Street, and our politicians. Gee, that's no surprise. All you got to do is pay them enough money and they will nod their heads and bob up and down. Oh, yes, yes, yes. With the old deceptive tactic of using relative risk reduction statistics about vaccine efficacy rather than honestly telling us the more truthful absolute risk reduction figures whenever they are rolling out their newest and increasingly unaffordable vaccines. Therefore, the writer wants to devote the remainder of this column to reporting some excerpts from the internet and end with some examples of published studies from courageous researchers who have gone up against the drug industry and reported the important statistics we should all demand to know when a vaccine or a drug is being sold to us. And the first thing is wait 5 years and see how long it takes to get recalled. Or maybe then you can sign off and people aren't dying or being, horribly crippled by whatever it is. And, look at their published information. The common side effects are swelling, diarrhea, nausea, severe heartburn, chest pain. The serious ones, which means call your doctor, get to an emergency room, severe musculoskeletal pain, kidney impairment. You know what that means, guys. More business with getting people connected for their kidney treatments. And you know what happens once they start, it is really hard to do anything other than dialysis. And there are other treatments available. Also, you can find osteonecrosis of the jaw, also known as dead jaw syndrome, because osteo is bone, necrosis is death. So bone death for your jaw, bone fracture, especially fracture of the thigh, which is the femur, the biggest bone in your body, or the hip pelvic area. Wow, your whole support structure. Yeah, knock them down, right? Esophageal cancer and atrial fibrillation for a 1 to 2% benefit. So the author of this is Gary G. Coles, MD. And I think he did a good job reporting on this. And the relative risk of something happening is where you compare the odds for two groups against each other, usually reported as a percentage, like Fosamix allegedly reducing risk of bone fracture by 50%. With all those side effects, if the drug is taken for 4 years, although relative risk does provide some information about risk, it doesn't say anything about the actual odds of something happening. On the other hand, absolute risk does. So relative risk reduction, RRR, statistic indicating how much risk is reduced in an experimental group compared to a control group. Always a gross over-exaggeration of the actual efficacy of a treatment. I love when my family tells me, oh, come on, what's wrong with you? Look at all these benefits. No, the problems, they're so small. It's such a small percentage. I have to tell them, guess what? Anybody can make up that percentage. Anybody at any time can react to any of these drugs. And they say, oh, well, it's fine. We'll go ahead and do it. Rats a ruck. You know, I said my piece. But here we find that the AAR statistic is in contrast a taboo subject because it's too truthful. And that's the absolute risk reduction. And it is the absolute difference in outcomes between a control group and the group receiving treatment. The percentage tells you how much the risk of something happening decreases if a certain intervention happens. So what is the NNT? Okay, the number needed to treat, I'm guessing, since I'm not seeing it. So one can see how using RRI to describe potential effect of a treatment would be enticing, particularly if someone wanted to exaggerate. Would they do that? The potential benefit of treatment. The core value of the NNT is its straightforward communication of the science that can help us understand the likelihood that a patient will be helped, harmed, or unaffected by a treatment. Then we get to the number needed to vaccinate. Now, I wonder, let's see what they say it is. I think it's to, you know, get over their investments and start raking in those big bucks. But what they're telling us is it's similar to NNT in that it says in one phrase how many patients will need to be vaccinated for one patient to benefit. The larger the number, the worse the efficacy of the vaccine or drug. And here's a few examples. Okay, the NNV for flu vaccine to prevent one hospitalization, which are exaggerated, is people with compromised immune systems. This is me, who wind up in the hospital because of a complication from the flu. It is easily treatable, but not with the temperature, fever suppressing drugs and the other drugs that they use, with some supportive therapy, proper hydration, proper nutrition, proper supplements. So we see that quantifying benefits and risks of vaccinating Australian children aged 6 months to 4 years with trivalent inactivated seasonal flu in 2010, in 1852, children would have to be vaccinated to avoid one hospitalization due to any strain of circulating influenza. The authors also estimated that for every hospital admission due to influenza prevented, vaccination with Fluvax or Fluvax Junior may have caused 2 to 3 hospital admissions due to febrile convulsions. There's no win here except for the doctors having more business. Now, the NNB for infant flu vaccine to prevent one hospital vaccination, 4,255. For childhood influenza, the NNB number needed to vaccinate to prevent one hospitalization or outpatient visit, 4,255 to 6,897 children ages 24 to 59 months of age would have to be vaccinated for influenza to prevent one hospitalization. Are you parents dumb? Is there anything inside your brains? I mean, I'm really sorry, but you don't know what it's like year after year to hear parents saying, if only I had known. And I look at the benefits that they have now with going online and doing searches and finding information like this that shows you just how bad it really is. You know, guys, do your due diligence. It's the future of your child, the rest of their life that you are gambling with and your own lives as well. So now they're looking at shingles and herpes zoster vaccination. We just covered that recently. Not doing what it's supposed to be doing for sure, actually creating more of the disease. And they're saying 175 adults over 60 years of age would have to be vaccinated to prevent one episode of herpes zoster. 231 adults 70 years of age or older, the same. Now, for pneumococcal vaccine in older adults, 5,206, because the impact and effectiveness of 23-valent pneumococcal vaccination in Scotland for those aged 65 and over during the winter of 2003 to 2004, the age over 65, what they needed 5,206 per invasive pneumococcal disease case to be prevented for one case. Insanity. The calculated VE vaccine efficacy rate was 61.7%, thus exposing the lack of utility of the fraudulent VE statistic. NNV for tuberculosis vaccine in Ireland, 646. Neonatal BCG vaccination in Ireland, evidence of its efficacy in the prevention of childhood TB. 646 children had to be vaccinated with that to prevent one case of tuberculosis in 1986, and then it dropped 551 in 1991. Gardasil, considered one of the worst ever created pharmaceutical nightmares, okay? Now, we know there have been so many deaths and crippling illness, compromised lifestyle, inability to function, compromised immune system, and it goes on and on. And I've seen firsthand these tragedies, and the mother still vaccinates the other family members, right? Brainstorm. You know, if one child is shown to be destroyed and you think there's some possible higher risk factor for your other children, I don't think that they think. That's the only bottom line there. But they're estimating the number to vaccinate to prevent diseases and death related to human papillomavirus. I'm not sure what this shows because it doesn't. And then for Group B meningococcal vaccine, 33,000 to prevent one case. I mean, these go on and on. Oh, data for statin treatment, NNT to prevent one heart attack. That's probably for the people that really want to be good patients for their doctors, so they program themselves that this is going to do a good job. To prevent one stroke, 154. The number needed to harm, yay, he finally is coming out with information for developing rhabdomyonecrosis of the heart. That's the muscle of your heart, my friends, dying off. I'm sure you're going to remember what necrosis means. 10 people on statins can develop this life-threatening disease. Don't forget the damage to the kidneys as well. So there are lots of links about it. 104 patients would have to take statins for 5 years for one case of heart attack to have been prevented. And the same, with 154 for one stroke. No difference in all-cause mortality. In other words, no improvement in mortality stats by taking statins. Absolutely insane. 2% of the patients taking statins out of every 50 developed diabetes, significantly more than the no statin group. For those taking it for 5 years, 1 out of every 10. Statin-induced rhabdomyolysis, more accurately named rhabdomyonecrosis, which is the death necrosis of muscle tissue, involves both cardiac and peripheral muscles. 10% is highly likely to be an understatement by physicians who generally don't make the diagnosis. Therefore, 10 is an artificially low estimate. Now, he's a retired physician, Dr. Coles from Duluth, Minnesota, and he's got a weekly column for the Duluth Reader, and he deals with the dangers of American fascism, corporatism, militarism, racism, and malnutrition, plus big pharma psychiatric overdrugging, over-vaccination regimens, and other movements that threaten the environment, prosperity, democracy, civility, and health and longevity of the planet and the population. Okay, sounds like a good guy. He sure is up against a wall. Now, let me get back over here. And, you know, since I'm sure that so many of you probably still have soft drinks, let's hear the little shorty about...
The question I'm asking is, are all calories equally fattening? And the answer is no. The calorie of brownies is not the same as a calorie of kale. It's just not. That's just common sense. But yet we try to pretend that they're the same. So if it's not about calories, it's really about our hormonal response to those calories, which is completely different depending on the different foods that we eat. But it depends on a lot of different things. Calories is a very simple measure, and that's really what is appealing about it, because not only does it tie together all different foods in a single measure, but you can also tie in things like exercise, and these sort of things are very appealing to companies that sell sugary beverages, for example. So they can say, okay, if you exercise, then it's okay to drink sugar-sweetened beverages because you've just exercised. there's a fundamental flaw in this whole energy balance equation. The energy balance equation says that body fat equals calories in minus calories out. So what we take from that is that we assume that if we simply reduce the amount of calories we take in, that we're going to reduce our body fat. But that's not actually true. That's not actually what the equation says. So there's actually two parts to it, the calories in and calories out. So the question really is, if you reduce your calories taken in, does your calories that your body expends stay stable? And the answer is no. And we've known this for about 100 years. So you can look at studies done in 1917 where they take volunteers and they reduce the number of calories that they eat by roughly 30%. Then they measure their basal metabolic rate, which is the amount of calories that they're burning on a day-to-day basis. And what you find is that the body has reduced its energy expenditure by about 30%. So if you're taking 30% less calories in and your body is using 30% less calories, then you're not going to lose any body fat, which was the whole point of the exercise. And this is the failure of this sort of calories in, calories out model, is that they're not independent variables. The calories in and the calories out are not independent of each other. They go up and down together. So simply focusing in on the calories leads you to fail in your efforts to lose body fat.
Okay, my friends, welcome to the real world of how your body functions. Because the calorie in, calorie out equation has contributed heavily to current epidemics of autoimmune disease and dementia. I mean, look at the garbage, the high fructose corn syrup and the, what do they call aspartame now? I can't remember, amino, some kind of crap, to confuse you. They change the name just like they've done with polio. No, they don't call it polio anymore. No, there were some children that had acute flaccid muscular paralysis. Oh, duh. Isn't that what polio does? But no, people just hear a new name and they bob their heads and they go along like little willing whatever to be slaughtered. And they are. And it is just very, very disappointing. And you've got to find a good clinical nutritionist, because there are wars between the dietitians and the clinical nutritionists. And, how can anybody put any stock in a dietitian who's going to recommend, oh, have some Burger King. Oh, the disgusting stuff I was just reading about Burger King. When you're in a hospital trying to recover, oh, you can have a treat. That's a treat. Oh, gosh, I guess I am so removed from the world. But what can I tell you? Now, there are questions. Do certain dietary components increase the risk for cardiometabolic disease by metabolic effects that are not driven solely by positive energy balance and fat gain? So they need more evidence, and it strongly suggests consumption of fructose sweetened, HFCS sweetened, or sucrose. Sucrose is bad. So is fructose. I mean, I can't believe seeing doctors treating patients and telling them, no, fructose is fine. You can have you can have fruit, it's fine. And it's like, oh my God, somebody get me out of here. I can't deal with all this. I can't watch it. But more research is needed comparing the metabolic effects of SSB, sugar sweetened beverage, versus sugar in solid food and refined or whole grain starch, right? No fiber there to slow down the absorption. And another objective, to certain dietary patterns or components have the potential to promote fat gain via mechanisms that are in addition to their specific contribution of calories to the energy side of the energy balance. Now, I'd like to tell you guys, they're saying there is insufficient evidence that a high cholesterol diet affects weight gain or weight loss, which is true, because we need fat. More studies focused on strategies to prevent weight gain in weight-reduced subjects are needed. Long-term studies were warranted to assess the effects of saccharin, acesulfame K, those are synthetic sweeteners, and steviol glycosides are amazing. Stevia, for people with Lyme, try taking stevia. You know, try shifting. Wow, how about doing something that's good for you? You know, so we know all the research on high fat and junk food and the other stuff that people claim they're addicted to blows me away when I see these comments. Oh my God, I can't give up. I forget one of these, you know, chain restaurants. To each his own. You won't see me there, that's for sure. Anyhow, there's, what is this? This is a whole conference, the CrossFit Foundation for Sports and Health. Okay, it's a whole long thing. You should go over to healthimpactnews.com and read this so you can see a little bit more. Okay, because it's a lot to go through. So let me get back over here, close that out, and let's see what else. I can't get over those robots. Oh my gosh, it is crazy. I think this was a short one. Can I do it in, let's try. Okay, this was one I wanted to get in, and it was perfect for today following Olay. Philip Giraldi via the Strategic Culture Foundation. False flag is a concept that goes back centuries. It was considered to be a legitimate ploy by the Greeks and Romans, where a military force would pretend to be friendly to get close to an enemy before dropping the pretense and raising its banners to reveal its own affiliation just before launching an attack. In the sea battles of the 18th century among Spain, France, and Britain, hoisting an enemy flag instead of one's own to confuse the opponent was considered to be a legitimate ruse de guerre, but it was only honorable if one reverted to one's own flag before engaging in combat. But today's operations are generally carried out by intelligence agencies, non-government actors, including terrorist groups, but they are only considered successful if the true attribution of an action remains secret. There's nothing honorable about them as their intention to blame an innocent party for something they did not do. There's been a lot of such activity lately. Interesting to learn by way of a leak that the CIA has developed a capability to mimic internet fingerprints of other foreign intelligence services. That means when the media is trumpeting news reports Russians or Chinese are hacking, it could just be the CIA, you know, making it seem like it originated elsewhere. Now, false flags can be involved in other sorts of activities. The past years, two major alleged chemical attacks carried out against Syrian citizens, and they were not by President Assad, resulted in President Donald Trump and associates launching 160 cruise missiles, are pretty clearly false flag ops carried out by the rebel and terrorist groups that controlled the affected areas at the time. But what we found is those attacks took out some areas that were producing a large amounts of income for the deep state. So, gotta wonder. The remedy against false flag ops, such as the recent one in Syria, is of course to avoid taking the bait and instead waiting until a thorough and objective inspection of the evidence has taken place. U.S., Britain, France did not do that. They instead preferred to respond to the hysterical press by doing something. And if the U.N., forget the U.N., the other major false flag recently that surfaced is the poisoning of Sergei Skripal and his daughter Yulia in Salisbury, England, March 4th. Russia had no credible motive to carry out the attack and had, in fact, good reasons not to do so. Allegations made by British Prime Minister Theresa May about the claimed nerve agent being very likely Russian in origin have been debunked, in part through examination by the UK's own chemical weapons labs. May, under attack even within her own party, needed a good story and a powerful enemy to solidify her own hold on power, so false flagging something to Russia probably appeared to be just the ticket, as Moscow would hardly be able to deny the facts being invented in London. Unfortunately, May proved wrong in the debate ignited over her actions and included the expulsion of 23 Russian diplomats, and it's done her severe damage. Few now believe that Russia actually carried it out. Oh, there was so much dirt on this. And whatever they were given was that not that Novichok, because it wasn't a deadly killer. So the lessons that should be learned from Syria and Skripal is that if an incident looks like it has no obvious motive behind it, there's a high probability it's a false flag. A bit of caution in assigning blaming is appropriate, given that the alternative would be a precipitate and likely disproportionate response that could easily escalate into a shooting war. Wow, let me tell you, all the dirt that came out when Yulia was released and she was supposed to have been injected with something while in the hospital, you know, this drug that nobody survives, and her dad was just released a couple of days ago. You know, these lies, these manipulations, they're just trying to create war, and it's not working. You're failing with your pathetic, disgusting lies and hatreds. So, my friends, it's been quite a morning. I'm your anchor and producer, Dr. Robin Falca. Find me at my website, helpfreedomrights.com, which is the place to get in touch with me. You don't have to spell my name, and it's easy to spell Help Freedom Rights. And you will be able to use the contact us page or the hot links and let me know what's on your mind. And if for some reason I don't reply, write to me again. So, okay, here we go. We'll be back bright and early tomorrow morning with more of Event Horizons. Now, you guys,
being foreclosed,
get out and make it better.
People working 2-3 jobs just to put food on the table and still drowning in debt. Don't get me wrong. This country was founded on great ideals and principles. They've all been ruined by the banks. Open your eyes to the banks that are robbing you. You know who my favorite president was?
Who?
Thomas Jefferson. Because he saw all of this coming and tried to stop it. He fought the banks. JFK too, and they killed him for it. The banking institution is more dangerous than an army, he said. He also said that every generation needs a revolution, Jimmy. The American dream is just that. Just a dream. War is a continuation of politics, only by other means. Politics is a continuation of economics by other means. This is our bank. This is our war. And this is our plan of attack.
Banks have become an essential threat to our democracy. So consider this
justice.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the internet. Please help support this station so this battle can continue forward. Revolution Radio!
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it, then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning! Warning!
We've got to stop them! They're going to kill us all!
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone or human being.
Time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to indicate to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio of freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves